beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lamb, rams, hogs, dogs, chicken, turkeys, rabbits.
You name it! Look!
I got beans, greens, potatoes,
thank
tomatoes,
you for tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, D Nice. What's up?
Hey.
I don't know what you just said. I don't speak that language. What?
Oh, you don't speak that language? I remember when Fat Albert first came out.
Finally,
someone speaks the language of my people, like on the television. It really was very monumental for me to see Fat Albert on the TV.
You know who speaks my language?
Who?
So I was raised in the church. You may not know. And
I cannot tell.
Jokes. Okay. Anyways. And you know, there were some greats that my mama loved, so I loved. And there's a story that you get told a lot when you grow up in a black church. And it's the Hold My Mule story. And nobody tells that story quite like Mama Shirley Caesar.
Wow. Freestyle champion.
She said.
Religious ranks.
Now, for those of you who don't know what we're already giggling about, a very old video, actually, of one of Shirley Caesar's performances of Hold My Mule has gone viral over the last few days because it's been remixed. In it, she says, I got greens, beans, potatoes, tomatoes, you name it. And somebody made a remix. First person made a remix. And then it just took off as it does. And I feel like it's great timing. Last year we had Thanksgiving with Black families. Mm-hmm. This year we have the You Name It Challenge. We have an older Black woman who has no edges nor front piece of hair.
Ooh.
On a walker twerking to the remix of Shirley Caesar. We have the Ricky Smiley Morning Show doing a whole video for it. And then we have the Willie Moore Jr. Show have Mama Shirley Caesar call in and sing it live.
Yes. I'm here for it. It's so great. It's so awesome. I'm so here for it. And the remixes, you know, they've done everything, but like they put Janet Jackson and Michael Jackson dancers to it. They got Beyonce. They got Beyonce on beat. Of course, somebody has to do Beyonce on beat. Everything. It's so, I got my whole life for that. I'm really happy about that, about that challenge.
I'm not even over it yet, but it's why do we get into this so much? How does this like come about? I mean, there was the mannequin challenge, which was dope. And there was a very poignant mannequin challenge that included the recordings of police brutality and killings towards Black people.
Mm-hmm.
And just right after that, we have, you know, the You Name It challenge.
Well, because you have all of these moments of Black brilliance that are usually only shared with like either your family or your church or a couple hundred people or whoever was at that concert that night. And now, because we're in the digital age, those moments can be like saved and amplified. And everyone can know that moment where you just like are sitting in a sermon and you're like, did she just like drop a house song? Like, like the one where they had everybody doing like the dead drops on the remix.
Oh, yes. The voguing. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Oh my goodness.
That, you know, but that she was just doing all of the things. Like it totally reminded me of if you ever read Zora Neale Hurston's Jonah's Gourd Vine, she has in that book retelling one of the last scenes of a infamous sermon. And usually those are things that you cannot put on page because there's just so much inflection, so much has to do about how you're singing it and your voice. But because of her style of writing, where she writes in Black vernacular, Zora Neale Hurston was able to convey it so well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so, you know, universal among Black folks that were raised in churches of like, wow, this moment when, you know, this moment is transcending whatever was supposed to be happening in this building.
Right.
It's transcending all of that. So yeah, I'm here for it.
I'm here for it all day. I'm still trying to find every video that exists for it. But but for real though, you gonna have some beans, greens, potatoes, and tomatoes at Thanksgiving?
I see how you are only holding it to the vegan part of the.
I can't remember because that's the part that gets played the most. Beans, greens, lamb. Potatoes, tomatoes, rams, hogs, lambs.
I'm just like, whoa.
She brought all of them home.
So, yeah, I'm here for all of it. I mean, I'm definitely not trying to cook a lot this holiday season.
Wow.
As you know, my house is usually a gathering place of millions of people. It's a mecca of sorts. And this holiday season, I'm trying to lay on the beach and learn how to surf.
Okay, but that's not for Thanksgiving. You gonna have a potluck Thanksgiving then?
I'm not trying to do that. No. that is a negatory. No.
Okay,
no.
So fly to London. I'm doing it.
Uh-huh. No. Like, I'm not trying. Woo. Thanksgiving's gonna be a very interesting time this year. We're just at that political moment where Thanksgiving has got to be a hot time of the year. And different than any of the last Thanksgivings probably in my entire lifetime.
Absolutely. And we're already to our second segment where we would like to go in on some different aspects of things that have happened and how we are coping and how we move forward since the election of Donald Trump to be the next president of the United States. You know, I was about to make a joke. But there's no room for jokes. Jay-Z got jokes though. Have you heard? Jay-Z is
no. What Jay-Z said?
Jay-Z got jokes. He's talking about he's feeling motivated to run for office. Him and Beyonce have been longtime friends of the Clintons. They've become friends with the Obamas. Apparently, the Obamas and the Clintons have told him that he would make a great leader. So he is seriously considering running for office in New York.
Since it's about reality show time, Paris Hilton. She is motivated. She voted for Trump.
We know she voted for Trump, though. He's a longtime family friend. She's a white girl. No one's surprised.
Very rich white girl. Even, you know, there was a tweet. I don't know the validity of it, but someone said that she grew her empire at like 5 times the rate that Trump grew his wealth just by like leaving it the hell alone.
I would agree with that. The Hiltons, the family, the Hiltons are much better with their money. And I don't know that it was 5 times, but she was definitely very successful. Also, you know, in some ways, the same way that Kim Kardashian did it. You know, she had her sex tape as well.
Yeah,
well, you know, that'll make you some money. Sex work pays. It pays.
For white women.
For white
women. Let's be real. Because you remember Lawrence Fishburne's daughter? Exactly. Like, nobody does.
Nope. Mm-mm.
Right. Exactly. She really was trying the Kardashian plan. She even said it. And no one knows where she is right now. So I think that, definitely underscored the fact that politics and celebrity has irrevocably mixed, right? Like, has gotten confused in people's heads in ways that, you know, you cannot turn those into two different worlds anymore. Motivating people to do all kinds of things. Hate crimes
are on the rise, yes. People losing jobs, though, too. Like, officials are losing jobs. A TV anchor from NBC, a local NBC affiliate, just lost her job because she, 31-year-old white blonde woman, told one of her colleagues that she's tired of reporting about these N-words killing each other.
Uh-huh. Yes, she did. A Baltimore school teacher. Also referred to children as the N-words.
yelling at them. You have an opportunity to get an education. Don't you want that instead of winding up dead?
Winding up shot, yeah. So, I mean, you know, white women, given that they gave Trump 53% of their vote, are showing themselves as policemen of white supremacy, are showing themselves as like down for all manner of Nazi ideology. I don't even, I'm wrapping my head around it. But Black women have been saying this for a long time.
Of course.
That white women will always choose race.
Whiteness over gender. Every day, all day. Mm-hmm. I think it's also really important to state that while everyone is saying this was an economy decision, it wasn't. And while everyone is stating that this is a decision of rural white America, the median income of a Trump voter was $70,000 US dollars.
They weren't hurting.
So that is not a rural.
They got a jet ski.
Working class. No.
They got a 401k at 70k unless they stupid. They all right. They are doing just fine.
They are doing just fine. And I'd like to just put something out there as well that keeps being forgotten. Voter suppression, which has happened since Obama's 2008 victory. Let me read a quote from a Time magazine so people can understand just how far reaching it is. The GOP, i.e. the Republican Party, Grand Ole Party, pushed through a number of laws at the state level to block as many of his voters, primarily African Americans, from the polls as possible. North Carolina targeted Black voters with nearly surgical precision, as was stated in the court case. Wisconsin Republicans were giddy about disenfranchising African Americans, especially in Milwaukee. Florida's GOP cut particular days of early voting to nullify the political participation of Black churchgoers. Texas required certain types of government issue photo IDs to vote and then ensured that nearly 1.6 million Black and Latino citizens would have very limited access. Ohio skewed its early voting laws to diminish the turnout in the cities while also implementing literacy tests that officials applied only to those in urban counties. The end result was that the Republicans had effectively shattered the Black and Latino demographic firewall that could have prevented a Trump presidency, end quote. And what's also really important to remind people of is the Supreme Court ruling on the Voting Rights Act that allows some of this to continue. However, some were overturned, like in North Carolina. And also, just to give an example, in Wisconsin, 300,000 people were turned away on the day of voting. And Trump won that state by 27,000 votes.
Wow.
Voter suppression is very real.
Mm-hmm.
So where do we go from here? Fact is, he's won. How he won, everyone has a finger to blame. It's not one thing. There were many things that led to his election. But most of all, it's, you know, the backlash of having a Black president over the last 8 years.
Backlash of having a Black president, foreign intervention, mistakes in the Clinton campaign that would have been negligible in any other campaign. Were grave in this one because of what it was at stake. You know, the way in which his lack of political acumen actually worked in his favor because people were not taking him seriously on any of the toxic things that he was saying. And now he's got white supremacists as his main advisor, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, all of that, there's so many. And all the voter suppression stuff that you're talking about, the fact that white women were faking the funk on feminism, the fact that, I mean, there's so many.
And the fact that
so many theses will be written on this.
And the fact that 50% of the voter population was uninspired or not moved or whatever, whatever, to go and vote at all. Now, my problem is people like Mark Lamont Hill, who spoke out before the election.
Saying he won't go vote.
No. Mark Lamont Hill said he was voting for the third.
He was going
for Green Party. Right. And he actually had the nerve to say, and this I find enraging. He actually had the nerve to say he would prefer a Trump presidency because then people will act. David Benner said something very similar. With a Trump presidency, Blacks can no longer feel comfortable. They will be forced to act. And
I wasn't feeling comfortable under Obama. I mean, like, Blacks have been in a constant state of discomfort and under siege.
The Black Lives Matter movement has gained ground under an Obama presidency. I think it's very dangerous. And I think only a Black straight man can say something like that, that they prefer a Trump presidency. I'm sorry. Women's reproductive rights, LGBTQ rights. Immigration. Who can prefer those things? Who has the room to prefer those things being taken away from them? Certainly not any queer woman.
I think what's happening is that, you know, for those people that are kind of politically active, like Mark Lamont Hill, and in somewhat of a political bubble, when he is confronted with apathy, he wonders, and this is all speculation, what would wake that individual up? And then thinks back to what woke him up. And it probably, for many of us, was some extreme case of injustice, right? Looking at something go down that we just thought was absolutely unacceptable. Evelyn from the internet said for her, it was, Mike Brown. Exactly. So I understand all of that, but I to wish a Mike Brown happening so that it can serve a cause of waking people up is problematic on many levels, because in this case, under a Trump presidency, it's not going to be Mike Brown per se. It will be more, it will be an abolishment of Roe versus Wade. It will be a completely gutting of Medicare. It will be the complete, I mean, so a lot of these things are going to be irrevocable that they do within the next 4 years, if the next four years happen.
Well, at the same time, people can't forget there is a legislative and there is a executive. The Republicans were not behind Trump. The establishment of Republicans were not behind him. He's taken Priebus, who is a, you know, representative of the Republican establishment, on as his chief of staff in hopes of changing gears. But at the end of the day, Republicans have constituents that they have to answer to, especially those in the House, because they get reelected every 2 years. A lot of things could go badly for them if they try to get too crazy. And they just have different interests. While he's not someone that I would support politically, I'll just give an example here. Lindsey Graham from the Carolinas, he is for immigration reform because his constituency require immigrants in order to thrive. They can't do peaches. Yeah, it's that basic. Their peaches crops would not make it without immigration, because peaches are a very funny fruit. And they have to be picked at a certain time. They have to be picked gently. Otherwise, you can throw them all away. So not, and you know, he's a very powerful Republican leader in Congress. So there are plenty of examples of Republicans also in the Southwest who are for immigration reform, are for finding a way, a path for immigrants who are already in the country to become naturalized or to become documented. So I don't think that on every issue, there's, you know, how many years has immigration reform been blocked on both sides? So I don't think, and it's also, you know, we have to be clear, the Republicans don't have a supermajority. That's not what we have either. So it's not like they're just going to go in, it's going to be smooth sailing and nothing's going to happen. Everything's going to happen that they want to see happen. At the same time, what can we do as individuals, as activists, as organizers to really mobilize and make a change? I personally have to say, and this might come back to bite me, but the truth is what it is. Black Lives Matter issued a statement on Trump's election, and I felt like there was that it was not a statement. It could have been like a statement from the press secretary at the White House. How did you feel about the statement? I mean, basically,
they essentially said, we got to keep doing what we've been doing. Trump don't change that. I mean, it mirrors what they have said about the presidential election at large before the vote, in that they feel that they're a grassroots organization, and while who is in the White House will have an effect on daily lives, it is not the type of organizing that they focused on.
Right.
Exactly. They are not the get out the vote movement. They are not the, you know, activist wing of the Democratic Party or the Green Party or what have you. They are not even, and they refused to endorse any particular candidate. And they found both candidates lacking on the issues of human rights of Black people. So in that sense, you know, I totally understood their statement. They did say Donald Trump has promised more death, disenfranchisement, and deportations, and we believe him. So I think that they do have a response to take him seriously. It's not like they think, okay, whoever's the president doesn't matter. But I think that it's going to take some time. And by that, I mean, we have to know what he's coming with for real in terms of policies and what he's implementing in order to calculate a response. Of course, there's a general response to, okay, y'all just put a sexual predator, rapist, / white supremacist in office. This is extremely hurtful and dehumanizing for all immigrants, for women everywhere, for queer people, for people of color. So of course, there is that aspect to it. But to have a tactical response to a person who you can't even trust what they say the next day, it's very hard. Very hard. Part of his power.
Well, I'm not looking for tactics. I'm looking for strategy. And that's my disappointment with those who, let's say, do have quite a large following.
Define the difference between tactics and strategy.
Tactics are reactive.
Mm-hmm.
A strategy has a vision. And yes, there's the platform that has been delivered. Okay. I don't know where that stands. But what is the strategy now? And the reason I say this is the fact that Trump was elected should not be shocking to anyone who is from a marginalized community. Why? Because, again, we've said the reasons. Backlash was certain. I didn't know a year ago that the backlash was going to look like Trump. I really didn't. But I believe it was earlier this year, I was listening to a podcast from the Financial Times, and, you know, the U.S. correspondent was asked, now that Trump has won the primaries, if it comes down, and it wasn't clear yet about Clinton, now that Trump has won the primaries, when it comes down to a Trump-Clinton vote, who will win? And the U.S. correspondent said then, honestly, it's a 50-50. And as you can see, he wasn't off. Numbers show just how close it was. So no one who's really, yes, of course, polls were off, whatever. People were in their feelings. Okay. White people weren't expecting it because they like to think differently of themselves. Fine. A lot of people were in the closet about the fact that they were voting for him. Yes. But people like Ta-Nehisi Coates, people like DeRay Meckeson, people like Mark Lamont Hill, who have, you know, they have access in ways that other people don't have access. They have a following in ways that other people don't have a following. They haven't really come out with statements where I'm like, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
I think too, we have to be clear about getting our bread from the breadbasket here, in the sense of, like, Mark Lamont Hill isn't a political strategist, in my opinion, right? Like, to me, I think he's brilliant. I think he's smart. But what we look at him for a lot of times is political analysis. He's talking head, not necessarily for forecasting and delivering tactical or strategical sort of movements for the Black community. I think just because he's just an intelligent man that has a lot of audience sometimes doesn't necessarily mean that that is his strong point. And Ta-Nehisi Coates, I would look at him as a historian, right, more than anything else. And he used some white yuppie money that he got to go and deliver a fluffy speech at a conference to put the election of Donald Trump into historical perspective, right?
Right.
Started talking way back from chattel slavery to Jim Crow to Reconstruct, everything. He went through everything. You know, everybody had a Black history lesson, and how we, a few people ran out and tweeted angrily about it because, you know, they were here to talk about technology or whatever. So that's reality. So they have their strengths. And sometimes in this political moment, those strengths can seem like limitations. But we have to be clear that they are not activists in that sense. You know, Melissa Harris Perry is a journalist, right? Mark Lamont Hill is a journalist.
She's not just a journalist. She is a professor of political science at Wake Forest University.
I did not mean to abbreviate that resume. I'm sorry. She's a lot of things. But I'm just saying that, like, it's kind of this conversation that we had about Cam back in the, you know, was it 2 weeks ago or whatever, where we said, okay, but we're at this political moment where we're literally asking Ja Rule what he thinks about this bill, where we're asking Cam Newton what he thinks about the election and Black Lives Matter, what we're asking, right, Richard Sherman and people who aren't oriented in this way. They didn't go to school for this. They ain't ready for this. Mm-hmm. Their dream is to do something totally different. And they all now have to be political actors. It's a rough thing. It's a responsibility that white folks don't have. Even Tom Brady, with all his, you know, kneeling down and praying on the field, has remained mum about who he voted for. So, and he's been allowed to do that in peace. This kind of shaking down of, you know, kind of like shaking of our Black prominent people and seeing what political ideas fall out when they just doing what they've always done to the best of their ability.
Of course. So what do you say? What's next?
What do I say? What's next? Wow, it's like asking the kitchen cook what. I feel, you know, like I clean it. I don't know. I feel very much.
What's next, like, for you? Let's put it that way.
What's next for me? Okay, so for me, in the little bitty grassroots stuff that I do here in my community, what's become very important is mental health. Is that I think that people completely underestimate the weight of having an entire government tell you that, you know, your existence doesn't matter. My introduction to Donald Trump as a New Yorker was the Central Park Five. That's when he sort of like came into focus for me, because he was calling for the death of five Black teenagers that were accused of raping a woman in Central Park.
Put out a full page ad,
put all his political might behind it, all of his wealth behind it. And those five Black teenagers, luckily, have been exonerated. And anyone that knows the law knows how hard it is to be convicted of a crime and exonerated of the crime. They are innocent of that crime. Meanwhile, while they were in jail being brutalized as minors against international law, the real rapist of this woman was chilling. He was having an iced latte, right? Yeah. So this is the focus on Black criminality has been what he cut his political teeth on. And so to have a man make a mistake that great, that devastating, and that that so much contributed to the idea, the false narrative of inherent criminality within the Black community that I lived in, become president, is such a dehumanizing thing. So I've had a lot of friends, and that's just for me personally, but I've also had a lot of friends call me just crying, and, you know, not able to leave the house, not able to get out of bed, not able to feel like what they did had any purpose, had any matter. I have some friends that work for the government that don't know how they could continue on that career path, given that the chief is about to be someone who doesn't see their value as a queer person or as a woman or as a Black person, as an immigrant, any of the above. So it's been a very taxing time for people in my community mentally. And so what I try to do is to share ways on how to cope with that. Because if you don't get past that, everything else doesn't matter. Like, if you want to build with people, they have to not be broken. They have to not be on the verge of tears at any given moment. They have to not be battling an active fit of depression or fit of anxiety. So ways of coping with that non-medically are what I've been sharing within my community, because I think that that is completely overlooked. I mean, this teacher that got fired in Baltimore that was yelling at these kids and saying that they're going to end up shot and they're the N-word or whatever like that, I doubt very seriously that those kids are going to get counseling. Like, I doubt it with every fiber of my being. Like, I just do. There is this neglect of the mental health of marginalized community that is criminal, even with children. You know, in this case, I just feel that this election has been so triggering for people, especially around his sexual predations. And that is why his name now is synonymous with a hate crime. You got a dude walking into Starbucks, and when the Black barista is too slow for his liking, he exclaims how he voted for Trump in a way meant to wound, right? Like, he's not, you know, that's the reason. I mean, that has never, ever happened with, you know, any other presidential candidate in history. Nobody was trying
to,
like,
even with W. So there you go.
Yeah. Like, nobody was ever trying to mess with people and just was like, yeah, you know, I voted for Dukakis. Like, you know, like, nobody ever did that. Mm. I think this is really a different type of thing. I mean, I've always talked about empire and about the many abuses of just the nation state in generally and America in particular, but specifically the election of this candidate is a hate crime. It is a hate crime, and I feel like we all have to heal from it.
In our third segment, what are we looking forward to? What are we excited about? I'm excited about Thanksgiving.
Oh, I know it's been a long time. I got cheese, beef, tomatoes.
I got greens, beans, tomatoes, potatoes. What? I just named it. I've been singing it the whole show.
What did you cook in particular? You going to have a tofurkey?
I'm going to have a real turkey. I'm going to have sweet potato casserole. I'm going to have green bean casserole. I might have some mac and cheese. I don't know. I'm going to have some stuffing. I'm going to have pecan pie, sweet potato pie, all gluten-free, all dairy-free. You know, I do a big. So.
Mm-hmm. And you going to invite, like, how many people you having over?
6 to 8. I'm going to keep it small.
White people. You have white people Thanksgiving.
It's going to be real, well, it's slim pickings as far as my Black American friends go here. Uh-huh. I've invited 2 Black American friends, and I currently have 2 white Americans coming. So, yeah, slim pickings.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I'm looking forward to, there's so much happening here in Vienna. Oh, I'm sorry, you missed something. Let's go back. Rewind. You know. Pull it back to selector. Let's look at it like a reggae set.
Okay, so I did for forget that there's something happening right now. The Fringe Film Fest, which is a queer film festival happening. I have to hate on it just a little bit, though. So, went to the opening night. The premiere selection was a film called Viva from Cuba. Amazing, beautifully well done. Interestingly produced by the Irish. It was like their official submission to the Oscars. But it was a beautiful story filled with amazing actors, amazing music about a man or a young, very young man who was living on his own. His father had been in prison. His mother had died. And he was working as a hairdresser. And a lot of that time was spent doing the wigs of drag queens who perform at a club. And eventually he decided to perform. Of course, dad comes out of prison to find his son made up. It wasn't pretty, and so on and so forth. He's also a sex worker on the streets of Havana. Beautiful story. Beautiful film. Yes, you know it had a happy ending. However, the opening was the problem with all of the people. It's the film festival is volunteer run, and everyone was on the stage. This is what happens with queer folks. They keep talking about inclusivity, but you don't see no inclusivity on the stage.
No.
And then the one lone black dude named Hakeem is on the stage, and old girl is talking, and she says, "Oh, he's not with us right now." And someone was like, "He's right here."
Wow.
He's on the stage. He's right here. Everyone has something to say. Everyone gets the microphone passed to them. Instead of just passing the microphone to Hakeem, the last person says, "Oh, did you want to say something, Hakeem?"
Oh, wow.
At that point, Hakeem was like, "No, I'm good."
Wow.
That's your inclusive programming for the Queer Film Festival in London. Again, it's volunteer run. So, you know, it is everyone, because I do things that are volunteer run. I know that it's a lot of time that you put in for no pay, and that's hard. Not everybody has that capacity, but everybody on the stage was able-bodied.
Paired able-bodied, yeah. And everyone, oh gosh, I just can't.
No, the stage was not accessible. Like they're
right. Okay.
That's not to say they might not have something else, but everybody on the stage was able-bodied. Everybody on the stage was white. Everybody on the stage was also, well, I'll keep it to myself, but let's just say they were doing a lot about trans inclusivity, and that was not visible on the stage either. So,
right. So yeah, the queer communities in Europe have a massive race problem, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. And it's something that has come up, and I've been discussing a lot with our mutual friend, because we are going to the Transitions Queer and Minority Film Festival, which is, you know, a white run film festival. And the films that are coming out of the European context by and large are all white. And last night we went to a showing of the Best of the Berlin Porn Festival.
Porn Film Festival, yes. Porn PFF.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So where one of the curators came and talked about it, a white queer woman, German queer woman, and talked about it at length. And one thing that our mutual friend pointed out was that all of the films that were coming out of Germany were all white.
Yes.
And the only splashes of color that were coming from films out of US.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've had that conversation with the PFF organizers year after year. I'm friends with just about everybody who is featured in the big films coming out of Berlin. Mm-hmm. There will be a Berlin film showing on Saturday that I plan on watching. And it falls on deaf ears, or I'm told, well, why don't you make a film? Or why don't you star in my film? As if you know, a symptomatic solution is going to change the course of things.
Yeah, it's a major problem within the queer community. I mean, I was even saying that, like, she was asking me how often I go out to like queer parties, and I go in packs. Like, I go with another Black woman. I do not go as a lone Black woman to a queer woman's party here, because I will be the lone Black woman, right? Like, it's a heavy burden. I don't want to deal with it all the time.
I've gone with you. I know.
Yes. You know what it is.
I know what it is.
You know what it is.
Yes.
So what are we looking forward to here in Vienna? There's a lot going on. We went to an art exhibition last night because there's this this whole series called Surviving Art School that is happening, talking about being a person of color within the context of universities and art school in Vienna specifically. I have an amazing project that was started by my friend Belinda, who's a professor at the University of Vienna. And she started something called the Library of Requests, where students of color would come to her and be like, gosh, you know, I wish that there were some information in the library that reflected our experience, that reflected what we're learning. And she made a list of all of these books that would represent a diversity of experience. And somehow, you know, Vienna got funded for everything. It was funded. 50 books are now in the University of Vienna library that were not there before, that are reflective of the experiences of Black students and students of color, including the first Spanish language text ever in the university's library. So that's awesome. And we got to see amazing artwork from, you know, Black artists out of Brazil, everywhere, you know, so it was really exciting time. The film festival, the Transitions Film Festival, is going on. Tonight is the closing night. The last film is a Black film. It's called Kiki. It's about the New York.
Yeah, it's playing here as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. And so I'm looking forward to that. We don't have tickets, but we've been like going and putting ourselves on a waiting list and strong arming our way in. So that's kind of how we're getting in to the Transitions Film Festival. People are very excited and looking forward to Thanksgiving here. I have one of my friends that's a gourmet chef that has these secret dinners, so she's having one of her massive dinners for Thanksgiving. So that's exciting. And our friend is having the major dinner for all Americans that are here, where it's a potluck dinner and all the Americans come together that are here. And the American files also, like, because British people be there, all kinds of people be there. So that's exciting. So that's what Vienna's gearing up for.
Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter, @TheQueerTruth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. You can also support us on Patreon, patreon.com/TheQueerTruth. Until next time, peace out.